What are you doing photobombing in a full kit?
Why not?
Because you're not in a team.
It was my responsibility to demand from everyone that come in the building and make it very clear from day one what Chelsea Football Club stood for. Would kick my nan if I had to win a tackle. I just remember standing looking over Moscow, just asking, why? Why then? Why did it start raining? Why did I slip? He FaceTimed me the other night, Mourinho. And I'm there, and I'm puffing the pillows, and my wife said to me, what are you doing? I said, the gaffer's called a guy. I'm shitting myself. Never really gone into detail about this, but I tried to make contact with Anton. I tried to make contact with Rio. I basically got shut down instantly.
This is Upfront with me, Simon Jordan. I believe there are a lot of vacuous, uninformed, unchallenged opinions out there. I want to get to the bottom line and cut through the nonsense. So with this podcast with William Hill, I'm going to get people with strong views who think they can stand them up to proper scrutiny. There's a good chance I might learn something along the way. And more importantly, so might you. Joining me in today's episode, a Chelsea legend who led the club through an unprecedented era of success. He lifted the Premier League five times, along with five FA Cups, three League Cups, one Champions League and one Europa League. A serial winner, a stalwart defender, and for many, the ultimate leader. John Terry, welcome to Upfront.
Thank you.
Nice to see you, John.
Nice to see you.
Here's a fun fact for you. I don't know if you know this. You were out on loan to Nottingham Forest, weren't you, in 1999-2000. And I bought Palace in 2000, and I put a phone call into Batesy and said, yeah, I'd like to sign that kid, John Terry. Mm. And I got, well, you can fuck off. He's a top player. He's not going to your club. Anyway, John, as I say, nice to see you.
Thank you.
When we have these conversations with you guys, one of the things we always try and establish is what your formative years were like. Mm. So you come from a background where your older brother was a footballer. Your father had a start in football but didn't get to be a professional footballer. Your background and your desires to go into football, was it always football? Was it always something you wanted to do?
Yeah, from a very young age for me. You touched on my dad kind of playing. He'd played from a very young age as well and played at a really good level, actually. Yeah. And had the opportunity, I think at the age of 18, 19, to go into West Ham.
Right.
Decided against it. And went out with his mates and parted and kind of went down that route and decided to play kind of pub football and, you know, but a good level still. So I think growing up with my dad, would playing every weekend, me and my brother, I just remember from the age of two or three, following him, being at his games, having a ball on the sideline, my dad going up to the bar after, and all of us kids playing football till 8, 9, 10 o'clock at night at the pub, go home, wake up Sunday morning, go again for another team. And being around my dad from a young age, just kind of, I knew that's all I wanted to do and all I wanted to be.
Was he very pushy? Was he very motivated for you to do that? Was it something that he saw an opportunity for you boys and ultimately something that he hadn't done?
Yeah, extremely pushy right from a young age, both on my brother and myself as well. And I think I had a little bit of an advantage going into this because in the age of 14 to 16, went into schoolboys and YTS, and my brother was a YTS at Chelsea, at Cheltenham.
Right.
And didn't make it as a first year pro. And just remember seeing the upset and the disappointment in that and how kind of mad my dad went at my brother around those times of my brother was kind of going out. He'd met a girl at the time and he was going to hers at weekends and all of that. My dad was constantly on his case. If you want to be a fucking footballer, you need to make sacrifices. Don't do this, don't do that. And it was a case of, wow, then my brother didn't make it as a pro.
Right.
So for me, going into that at Chelsea, definitely give me an advantage going, wow, I've got 2 years here going in at Chelsea. I need to make every sacrifice, give it absolutely everything in those 2 years. And I feel I'd done that. So again, being around my brother and playing with his mates, which were 2 years older than me, I was a lot smaller, less physical. Right. I had to find a way to kind of compete with against them, really. So again, I think that helped me being around my brother and him failing.
Your father pushes you, doesn't he? As you just discussed, and I'm seeing here that you had a bad injury when you were 12, and his attitude towards you and what you had to do, tying a bag of sugar to your leg and getting you to do it, and to do 100 leg raises and then pushing the bar, was that part of what shaped the psyche that you developed that became the leader that we knew you to be or know you to
be? Yeah, 100%. I feel I had it in me. As a young player anyway, and we'll get onto a couple of bits as we move on, but always trying to prove to my dad that I was good enough for him. And after winning 8-0, I remember us winning 8-0, I scored 8 goals as a young kid, got in the car, was absolutely buzzing, you know, got in the car. And honestly, I cried all the whole way home. My dad just grilling me the whole way home. Should have had a triple hat trick and should have done this, should have done that. And it was just a big, every weekend for me, no matter how well I played, it was never good enough. And just pushing me to that level week after week after week. I don't really remember my dad ever telling me that I played well from a young age. So I was always kind of searching for that, if that makes sense. But on the flip side of that, my dad was the one kind of going to work at 6 in the morning till 6 at night, coming in, providing football kits, new boots. I had the best boots, the best football kits. And you kind of go back to that injury I had. It was my dad that pushed me. Wake up in the morning before he went to work at like 5:30. I'm on the kitchen side lifting weights before school. He'd come in from work and he'd get me exercising, making sure that my mum had done it with me whilst he was at work and all of that. So constantly pushing. But again, he was the one that got me back fit and actually probably in a stronger place than I was before my injury as well. So definitely benefited from it.
Would you be like that with your kids, knowing the effect it had on you in terms of it drove you on? Other kids, it might have dragged them down.
Yeah. Well, I was to an extent, to be honest. And then probably was kind of pushing my boy to play football and push him. He wasn't a keen footballer.
Right.
And kind of shied against it. My daughter loved football and spent a couple of years in the academy at Chelsea, whereas my boy, I think from the pressure of it, of being my son and playing, found it tough. And I pushed him probably till the age of 8 or 9. And then he then pulled away completely. So we'd go and watch my daughter play. He'd be on the sideline just wanting to watch, didn't want to, you know, partake in the football. And actually had a conversation with him the other day and he was like, Dad, I wish you would have pushed me. I'd love to be a footballer now. And it's not, it's too late, but yeah, maybe I should have kind of been more like my dad. But again, my boy is not me.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And my daughter's not me. And I think a big learning curve for that was when I went into Villa.
Yeah.
I kind of went into Villa as a coach thinking everyone has to have the same mindset as me, have to turn up early, be the last one to leave, do extras before and after training. But also what I didn't really take into account, probably as a captain as well, and certainly as a coach, that there's a lot more in today's world that goes on with players and their families. This was during COVID. We had one player at the time that hadn't seen his wife or kids. He just had a newborn that was back home in a foreign country. He was here for 6, 7, 8 months without his family. And I said to the gaffer, we can't pick him. How can we pick him? He's been shit every day in training. And Dean Smith said to me, have you spoke to him? And I was like, why would I speak to him? He's been shit. Why? He went, go and have a coffee with him. So messaged him the night before, come and have a coffee in the morning at the training ground. Come in and he just broke down. Hadn't seen his family. And for me as a coach going, fucking hell, how did I not see that? How did I not recognize that from the captain or whatever that was before? How did I not recognize that in somebody? We end up giving him a couple of days off. He managed to get home and see his family during COVID, which was tough for him. Come back like a new player. And was brilliant for us after that, you know. So it definitely opened my eyes to there's a million ways to skin a cat. If that
would
makes
that
sense.
Have made you, with that level of insight, you'd have made a better captain if you'd have been able to see certain facets in other players when they were struggling?
Yeah, I think so, because I look at De Bruyne, I look at Salah that have gone on to be two world-class players that was in the building at the academy in the first team with us. Our training sessions at Chelsea under Mourinho in that first year were more intense, a higher level than a game on a weekend in the Premier League, because you're playing against Drogba week in, week out, day in, day out. And these guys come in, they were way below that. Right. Now, as a captain, I look at that of going, I was on them, I was aggressive with them. It was the levels here, you need to be better, you need to train better. And I kind of regret it in some parts, but don't in another, because I had a short career and I wanted to get the most out of it and get the most out of the players around me. You know,
Did that have any effect on those two? Specifically,
I don't think so. Because they went on to do what they've done, and without them kind of stepping away from Chelsea and going out and learning their trade at a smaller club and then coming back into the game, I'm not sure. But at that particular time, how Mourinho was and how we was as a group, they weren't anywhere near, no chance.
Was that you, or was that sort of a Mourinho-esque approach? Was it an approach that you were encouraged to have with younger players, or was it just you going, I'm at this level, we're at this level, you guys need to be at this fucking level? Or was it something that was passed on to you to perhaps engender in the younger group?
Well, I think Mourinho come in and definitely installed that in us as players and give us responsibility to demand from each other a lot more than we had done previously. And I think I'd seen Chelsea over the last 5 years before that have kind of be something or on the fringes of being a really good club. We were signing the likes of Franco, Viali, Di Matteo, all these foreign players that were great for the academy, but we never went to that level where I felt we should have been. So when Mourinho first came in the building, the level was here, like I say, and I was so scared of it ever dropping or us going back to the old Chelsea, if that makes sense. So for me, I felt it was my responsibility to demand from everyone that come in the building and make it very clear from day one what Chelsea Football Club stood for.
But have I got this right? You get an opportunity. You're a Man United fan, right? Obviously, you're from the South.
No, I wasn't a Man United fan.
Well, that's the rumour I heard that you were a Man United fan.
Yeah, that's the rumour out there, yeah.
Not true?
No.
Okay, fine. Well, we'll dispel that myth then. But you had an opportunity, Man United, that their engines have started, the Premier League's starting to get going. They're the Premier League champions. Mm. And my understanding is that you choose to go not to Manchester United, you choose to go to Chelsea. Mm. In the mid-90s that are not much, why would you choose Chelsea over Man United? The biggest club in England that's winning the Premier League.
In this time, I was kind of floating between Arsenal, Man United and Chelsea. Mm-hmm. Arsenal had rolled out a red carpet for me. Man United had done the same.
Yeah.
And Chelsea didn't do...
anything.
No, didn't do anything. Right. All they offered me was a pair of boots per season and my £2 expenses for getting the train from Barking to Battersea. Mm. Nothing else. I had Sir Alex Ferguson phoning my house, speaking to my dad, speaking to me on a weekly, monthly basis, mm-hmm. checking in that I was going to school, I was doing everything right, I was training. It was incredible. When I walked into Chelsea, I knew Chelsea was the right club for me. Wow. And I just felt it was home. You know, you walk into a house and you have that feeling of, I'm here for the next 20 years. I felt that at Chelsea. I don't know what it was, because like I say, we were training at Battersea Park. Mm-hmm. I had to get the train on my own from school. So I'd leave school at 4:30, get there for 7 o'clock, walk across the park on my own, get my £2 for the train fare home, which mm-hmm. I never did. I pocketed that and bunked the fare. I then go home, but I'm walking across Battersea Park now at 10 o'clock at night on my own. I get in at like 11:30 from the age of 14, 15, done that for a couple of years, and then had a decision to make who I was signing for. But I just absolutely loved it. I just fell in love with Chelsea.
Nothing to do with any fear of going into Man United and not being up to it?
Definitely not. Listen, that's not my character at all.
Well, that's why I'm asking it.
Yeah. So I went on trial for 2 years, played a lot of games. Same with Arsenal as well. Spent a lot of time in their academy, which was also very good. Probably as well, when I signed schoolboy forms on the pitch at Chelsea, you would know this as well. They put on a meal for you and the family. So mm-hmm. it's myself, my dad, my mum and my brother. Chelsea are playing Liverpool, so I'm signing at halftime. And before the game, my dad kicks off, "You should fucking sign for Man United."
I was going to ask you that. What's your dad's view on it?
Yeah, well, he's not happy at all. He's a Man United fan, my dad, and he wants me to sign for Man United.
Right.
And again, this probably answers your question. And because my dad was probably pushing me there, this was probably my way of going, no, I'm doing what I want to do. And we're in the tunnel now, and my dad's going, "I'm not signing the fucking forms." Well, my mum says, "I'll sign the forms." "No, you fucking won't," is my dad's response to that. So now I'm crying my eyes out. Glenn Hoddle and the team come past. "I want to fucking see you." So whilst my dad is now debating with Glenn Hoddle, who then pulls him into a side office at halftime, so he's due to go in and take his halftime team talk, me and my mum quickly go out on the pitch with Graham Ricks and sign a schoolboy form. Right. So my mum done that for me, which shows big character from her. It didn't go down well, but that was it. And from there, I just knew I wanted to be at Chelsea.
You go into the senior dressing room at 17. You make your debut at around about that age. Gianluca Vialli is the manager. You've got Gianfranco Zola. You've got LeBeouf. You've got Di Matteo. Do you see that as a great sea change in the development of English football? Because I personally think that a lot of the reasons why coaching and players in this country are better is because we've had this influx of overseas players, overseas coaches and overseas thinking. What do you think to that?
I completely agree. And I think having those players around, so when I signed as a 16-year-old, those guys was around, and watching the likes of Franco turn up to Harleton, Vialli, we had no chef in the building. Right. These guys turned up and wanted a big gym built so they could go in and stretch before the sessions. We employed an Italian chef, and the food went from very average to very, very good overnight.
Right.
And it just brought a real professionalism into the training ground of how we how we as young players, and I definitely was one of those who benefited from that for sure, having those guys around and seeing how they worked. But these guys were doing tactical work on opposition and how they press. Do we trigger? Do we go early and all of that? So it was a real eye-opener. A little bit boring, probably initially, and different for us guys of viewing it that way. But just a great learning experience, I see it as.
What was Viali like? I mean, I spoke to Gianfranco Zola about him, who had a lot of affection for him. What was he like as a coach? What was he like as a bloke?
Brilliant, really. Honestly, just first and foremost, a lovely man. Second of all, an unbelievable player who had time for absolutely everyone in the building. As an older pro, he would kind of shout down the corridor, JT, make me a coffee. So you'd have to go and make him a coffee, one sugar. JT, run me a bath. And you know, little bits like they're priceless. So be in the bath. And I remember running baths and my dad kind of swirling it, hot water. So it's not hot one end and the other end, getting it absolutely perfect for him. And I'd have 5 minutes while he's in the bath and he's got his boots on ready for the game tomorrow. So Luca, when you make that run, and he, no, you don't want to be too tight to the defender, JT. You've got to be arm's distance and all of that. And I'm there as a young kid going, oh my God, this is unbelievable.
Right.
So anytime he shouts down the corridor, I'm there. Like, lads, let me do it. I want to run him a bath. I want to make him a coffee, because he'd have so much time for you as a young player. Yeah. But just an incredible man, extremely funny, and just brilliant with the young lads.
You go out on loan to Forest. You come back in 2000. Ranieri's in there now. He gives you the first opportunity to be captain of the side, doesn't he, in 2001. You're 20, 21 years of age. How easy was that to embrace? How natural? Because everyone thinks, when people think of John Terry, a variety of things, but one of the things they'll think, right, is natural leader.
Yeah.
Right? How natural was it for you at that age to be in a side and lead and be the captain?
Very easy for me. I felt comfortable, and training with the likes of Frank, I used to kick absolute lumps out of Luca when he was manager. And after training, he'd pull me and go, don't ever change, JT, don't ever change. So I promise, when I come off that pitch, I had so much respect for these older players. But on the pitch, it was like we were all on the same level for me. And again, I think I was really lucky at that time, because Wisey was there. Graham Lasso was in the last years of their contract. And when Ranieri first come in, Wisey was still captain. And they went to Claudio, and Franco was part of this as well, and said, listen, we're not going to be here forever. I think you should make JT captain. So again, they see something in me that Ranieri did as well, and said, let's make him captain while we're still in the building, and we can help nurture and support him along the way.
Natural succession.
Yeah, I didn't know this till a later date.
Right.
But I do reflect back and remember them kind of speaking to me individually and collectively about certain things on the training pitch and off the pitch, you know, just little nuggets that I kind of took with me. But I was so young, I didn't really
realize the bigger picture.
No, I didn't at all. No, I was just there playing football.
Right. When Abramovich walks in the door, what's that like? You've got this Russian oligarch that's come in with huge amounts of wealth, the wealth that people haven't really associated with the Premier League at that point. You're in the building. What's your first experience of Roman Abramovich?
He come in and addressed us as a group of players, and obviously through translation, which...
He speaks English, though.
He does speak English, but he's not very confident. He's a very shy man.
Right.
So even with me, back end of my career, would be minimal words spoken in the dressing room. And if he wanted to go into full detail, it would be through Eugene or one of his kind of translators or one of the guys there. Yeah. But he addressed the group through a translator and said, things are going to change. And it was very, very Russian, very firm. This is how it's going to be. You either kind of come along with a ride or you get left behind. Previously, I don't know what's gone on. Don't really care what's gone on.
Yeah.
But we're moving in a different direction. And the standards will be brought up. You leave that to me. Players, training ground, food, everything like that, stadium is my responsibility. The football is your responsibility. And it was very black and white. It was like that, do your jobs. And if not, you'll be replaced. And that got addressed to us a couple of times after sacking managers as well.
Right.
You know, later on down the line when he addressed the players.
To what end?
To the end of, if not, I can't keep replacing managers. Eventually, I'm going to have to get rid of three or four of you, the big characters from this dressing room, because that might be the issue, and move you on and get people in.
When AVB come in, there was a perception from the outside that he was asked to break up the dressing room and that the owner wanted to change a few things and that the dressing room was getting a bit too big for itself. Maybe you were included in that conversation, I don't know. And the perception is that AVB was a little bit sold down the river because he came up against player power. Hmm. He came up against the strength of the dressing room and Abramovich went the other way and paired back from it.
Yeah. So there's all these kind of rumours that player power at Chelsea was too big. It wasn't. It genuinely wasn't, because when I was there, there was managers in charge. So Mourinho was in charge. Anything higher than that, Abramovich was in charge. He was very clear as us group of players. Anything in the dressing room was my, Lamps, Didier, the senior players' responsibility to control that. Was very clear. So when ABB come in, I'll give you a little story. We went to Hong Kong, I think, when he was first manager. We get on the plane, we get on, and I'm sitting in economy on a 13-hour flight. And we've got Josh McEachran, Nathaniel Chalobah, a couple of other young players, all in first class. And this is part of ABB's going, no player's bigger than me.
Right.
Everyone's the same. So I'm going on the plane going, no, we're not going anywhere until these young players go back in economy and the first team players that have built this club to where we are today go back in first. And we're on the plane, people's up and down, AVB comes up, what's the problem? I'm going, well, we're not going anywhere until the young players move. And to be fair to the young players, they're going, this JT is really uncomfortable, we'll go back. And I'm going, no, it's not your decision. Has to come from, he has to own it as AVB. So this is one of his first things in front of everyone. In the end, it spins, so all first team players fly first, younger players go back, economy. That's how it should be. These younger players are striving to be where we've got.
Yeah.
And he tried to make a statement day one, and he fouled instantly.
Right.
Because I promise you, the plane wasn't going. And if it was going, it would have gone without myself, Frank and Didier.
This litany of managers over the years, you have Avram Grant, you have Scolari, you have, you know, we just mentioned AVB, you've had Hiddink, you've had Ancelotti, Di Matteo, your mate Benitez. This balance of power between the players and the manager, does it exist? Did it exist? I mean, we had John Obi Mikel talk about something the other day about you and Benitez, and Benitez wanted to bin you off and they weren't having any of that, and the players pretty much overturned it. How's that work?
How does the players overturn?
Well, yeah. I mean, I personally believe, and it might be because the scale of player was different, right? So I priced that into my thinking, that my champion is the manager, and I back the manager, and you lot do as you're fucking told.
And not if you bring in Benitez, though. Who would have been your biggest rival?
Oh, I get it.
Benitez was always Liverpool. So when you come into the building, like you say, you get an opportunity very early to make an impression to the group. And his first impressions were, at Liverpool, we used to do this, and Liverpool that. And so me and him were like that right from the off. Did he throw Benitez in to kind of
liven you up?
Yeah, test the waters a little bit, maybe. Didn't think it at the time, but looking back now, it was a strange move.
But the question's about balance of power, John. It's about the balance between the players and the manager. If things aren't right and the manager's getting replaced, surely that means that the culture in the dressing room might not be right as well, and it's not really that prevalent what you lot think. Surely it's more prevalent what the new manager thinks. What you did before, you were quite prepared to hear Roman Abramovich tell you that whatever's gone before isn't what's going to go forward.
But
you guys have got your own view now, what should happen in the dressing room, and a new manager coming in kind of defers to that, but it feels like.
That's again down to the new manager. So if a new manager comes in and doesn't address that, so if after the first two training sessions, two people turn up late and it doesn't get addressed by the manager, at some point, as captain or vice captain, that needs to be addressed, because you know that's a cancer in the dressing room.
Right.
If you have that for the whole season, that goes from that to team meetings to everything else. So that needs to be addressed.
You also know the manager's not got hold of things straight away, haven't you?
Yeah, straight away. Yeah. So again, the balance of us as a senior group in that dressing room, knowing when Mourinho's there, there's one man in charge. That was very, very clear.
Yeah.
Do not overstep your mark. Do not think you're the biggest player in world football, because it'll bring you down very quickly. Down, yeah. When Ancelotti was there, it was very clear in a different way that he was in charge 100%. With different managers, when Avram was there, we had to take control because Avram didn't want to deal with that and didn't know how to deal with that. We worked out a balance to the best of our knowledge and the ability to make Chelsea Football Club the best it could be on a yearly, monthly basis.
It's an interesting dynamic, because it requires the players to be operating at a very high level.
Well, we were. That's why we achieve what we achieve in the timescale. Year after year, we had a couple of off seasons where we were really off it. Other than that, we were competing for titles year after year. We were doing the right thing on a daily basis. So I look at the group of players that we had. I certainly wasn't there you look at the likes of Lamps and Didier and Hazard, and these guys were here. I was here in terms of ability,
right.
But in terms of giving absolutely everything every day for the football club, yeah. I'm above them. Yeah. I'm not even on their level, I'm above them. Right. And everyone needs to be there. And if not, then I'll bring them into line with that.
Right.
And I think of that balance of the quality we had and the players that were on my, thinking of my mentality the same way, we had such a good combination.
When Mourinho comes in 2004, he gives you the captaincy full time. What was the conversation? How did that conversation manifest itself?
It wasn't no conversation. It was pretty much that. It was pretty much that. So we had a few days back in England before we went to LA, the first pre-season with Mourinho. Training sessions, real chance to obviously impress, which we were all kind of petrified after the press conference.
Petrified. Why?
We're just seeing, we were shitting ourselves. We were in kind of phoning each other. Like, we didn't know what to expect. We've been with Claudio before that, was very kind of calm and everything like that. We just didn't know what to expect. It was quite intimidating listening to him, how confident he was. Yeah.
But that's you, though. You're confident, aren't you? You're not getting phased as a 21-year-old being given a captaincy. Why would someone that's going to be a clear leader make you unnerved by that?
He FaceTimed me the other night, Mourinho, and the phone starts ringing, and I'm there, and I'm puffing the pillows, and my wife said to me, "What are you doing?" I said, "The gaffer's calling." I'm shitting myself. And I still, to this day, he makes me so nervous. I would have done absolutely everything for this man, everything. I just have so much respect for what he done for me individually and for us as a team. Like, I absolutely adore him.
When you're listening to that first press conference, besides the idea that you're going, "I've got a fucking live one here," what kind of impact did it have? Did it inspire you? Did it go, "Right, here we go, different level now, different level of person"? Walk me through that initial reaction to Mourinho. I'm a Mourinho fan, right? I get tired of the nonsense that I listen to from certain colleagues of mine in the media about what he is and what he isn't, right? And I still think he's an elite manager. I think everyone has their day, and the next generation comes along and nothing lasts forever. Otherwise, Stephen Hendry would still be the greatest snooker player around. Things change, right? One of your heroes,
He's still the greatest for
me. Well, yeah, maybe, but not in today's game. You know, Ronnie O'Sullivan would have that discussion, wouldn't he? But your response to Mourinho and the call to action, because it's a call to action, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm walking in a press conference, bang, lights are on. On to you boys now.
Yeah, he was very much that. So again, love the fact that he kind of created a siege mentality. It was like the press and the whole world and the whole Premier League against Chelsea Football Club. That's how it felt in that. And I think when you see him work, so I remember the first day I arrived at training, I would always drop my kids early and be the first in. And I remember getting there really early. Well, I used to think it was early. And I got there and I'm in the canteen and he's out on the training pitch, putting the cones out, walking through the session with his notepad and his clipboard, with his coaches, and he's pointing and he's this and he's that for about an hour. And then obviously a couple of hours later, we go out and do our first session. But in that first meeting that he took with a group of players, the first image he put up on the board was a picture of the Premier League.
Right.
And it was, it sounds small, but it was like, "We're going to win this year." It was very simple through hard work and the players we have in this dressing room, and then go on to tell the press and the world that Didier was the best striker in the world. Frank was the best midfielder.
Right.
Peter Cech was the best goalkeeper. JT was the best defender. Mm-hmm. We'd never been told that before. It was, isn't he? Not sure. He was very clear of going, "No, my boys are the best players in the world." And he made you feel so special.
How big a difference was there between what you'd been told? Because Ranieri wasn't a slouch. You were doing okay under Ranieri.
Yeah.
But what was the difference between him and Ranieri?
Difference was a lot of things. Now, I'm obviously very grateful to Claudio for giving me my opportunity and as captain and all of that. But Mourinho, from a tactical point of view, how we approach games and how we dissected the opposition was to a level I still don't see today. From the sessions he put on and how we addressed us as a group of players and pushed us on a daily basis was something like I've honestly never seen. Even with the group that, so you know, Saturday the team plays, Sunday you're in training and the ones who play kind of recover. He was out there pushing that next 11, asking them question, "Why you're not in my starting 11? Right. Why are you not in my starting 11?" And anyone who underperformed that day, he'd be absolutely grilling them. He was constantly at people, poking them, on a daily basis. He'd walk past, you'd lose a game in training. He'd walk past, you'd lose a small-sided game 2-1. And he'd be like, you accepting that?
Mm.
Like, just a little word in your ear. And I'd be like, accepting what? He'd be like, you only lost because of fucking him not running. And I'd be like, yeah, you're right. And now I'm at Obi or someone like that. And now me and Obi are like this together. Now the next game, we end up winning 3-1. And the level's gone from here to here. He was constantly poking every single player and getting the maximum out of them. And I'd never seen it. I'd never seen them. Normally I see it where people go, fucking hell, yeah, it'll be gone, or that kind of mentality. It was everyone wanted to please the manager.
What do you think his greatest attribute was? I spoke to Michael Ballack and he told me his greatest attribute was man management.
Mm.
Is that right? Is that his greatest attribute? Or did you encounter different attributes that you thought were equally as compelling?
It's difficult to highlight one. That would be one. He gets a lot of stick for that as well. For his man management.
Right.
Like, even the second time around at Chelsea, was he too hard? Did he change and all of that, which is absolute nonsense. So I would agree with Bally for sure. But from a tactical point of view, in those big games we had under him, especially against Barcelona, Man United, Liverpool, when it was a big game, you felt it was a big game. When we were playing the likes of Blackburn, West Ham, say, it was, no, we're not even thinking about them. We're actually going to win the game. It's all about us. On Thursday and Friday, you start doing work on Messi and getting in them little pockets, and Obi, you need to fill this space, and JT, you need protection there, and this, that, and the other. You're like, oh, these must be good. They must be good because we're doing 2 days' work on it.
You're being specific on it, yeah.
But he would go to levels. I mean, we played Bolton 1 year on a Saturday. Friday, we go into the meeting. He's got the session from the day before at Bolton. So you got Big Sam on the mic. How he's got it, I don't know. What we're going to do is we're going to hit Ashley Cole, and we're going to do this, and we're going to do that. This is Big Sam and their tactics before they play Chelsea. He's got it. He was into absolutely everyone. The referees knew their name, knew their kids' names.
Right.
Everyone. He is an absolute genius.
What was it like for you? I mean, you've got this image in people's minds that the top captains are aligned with their managers. What did he expect from you, and what did he demand from you? And what was that like in terms of being a captain as opposed to being one of the players?
He expected a few things. He expected me to be really robust.
Yeah.
And to play for injuries when...
Did you challenge him? Did you challenge him?
No, never.
Never?
Never.
Did you ever think he was wrong?
No.
Because you're quite capable of telling people when they're wrong, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's an interesting one. No, but... No, never challenged him, no.
But did you think he was wrong at times?
No.
You thought he was right all the time?
Yeah, I did, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. Genuinely, I did, yeah. Mm. That's a real interesting question. So, I've never thought of it like that.
So you are a total Mourinho disciple.
Yeah.
You're in his sect.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what's it like when he goes then? Was it a massive shock for you guys? I mean, what did you do? You got booted out of the cup against Mulder, didn't you, or someone?
Yeah, someone. We drew in the Champions League and then he kind of went after that. But again, I've never seen a dressing room of grown men crying when he went round the dressing room. And it just shows the affection and the thoughts we had for him. So it was a big loss having someone, again, kind of... telling us to do this, this, and this. We'd never really had to do anything on our own, if that made sense, going into games, because he was always so good and had everything covered.
He was omnipotent, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, it was tough and emotional.
So do you think Roman was wrong to get rid of him?
Yeah, I do, because I think what he'd achieved, if anyone deserves a bit of time, he probably did.
Even though it's almost like an established wisdom now, isn't it, with Jose? He goes into environments, it's a 3-year burn. It's a 3-year mentality, and it's proven to be the case in his career. Not that he goes somewhere 3 years, success, a little bit less success, then a problem, and then he's gone.
Mm.
Do you think that Chelsea would have been better for him staying?
I think in the long run, yeah, I'd have to answer yes. Just because of what he'd achieved in a short space of time then. I don't know what goes on behind the scenes with managers and owners. Mm. I don't know. At our time, we were thinking about the football side of it. We were certainly way off at where we've been from 04, 05, 05, 06 to where we were 06, 07.
Right.
That's for sure. So as a group of players, we understand that as well. We're not then getting together in the dressing room going, oh, thank God the manager's gone and we can now move on.
No.
It's a case of us actually dissecting once the manager goes, we're going, why are we in this position? Why has the manager been sacked? So as a group, again, taking responsibility for the manager being sacked is on us, effectively.
Roll forward to Mourinho coming back in. Mourinho 2.0. Is it a different Jose? What's changed about him?
I don't think he changed at all for me. I think as a generation, I think people were changing. Players, staff, and everything else around him.
But does that mean he's not evolving with the times?
But yeah, probably a little bit, right. Yeah. But why should he? When you've been so successful,
You have to. You can't say the same things. You can't say the things to players now that you could have said 25 years ago.
I agree to some extent. But at the same time, it was basics of demanding from people in training. It wasn't kind of, you know, treating people wrongly or whatever that may be off the pitch. But I didn't see any change in him when he first come back, personally.
Right.
But I go back to a conversation. So I was in Portugal before he'd come back in, and there was rumours of him coming back in. And I got a phone call from him, and I was sitting there having a meal with my wife and a glass of wine. And he said to me, JT, I'm coming home. This was his words to me.
Right.
And you're my captain. Now, I was on the verge of
crying.
Being... no, not on this one. Oh. I was on the verge of being forced out of Chelsea at this point for the Benitez one and all of that.
Right.
And I had I think 2 years left on my contract and negotiations hadn't started, etc. And for him to pick up the phone and say, JT, you're my captain.
Right.
And regardless of what anyone else says, people in the club tell me you can't play two games a week. You're my man.
Right.
I've never trained so hard in all my life to go back pre-season as fit as I was for him that year. When I talk about managers, I look at the best manager in the Premier League. Sir Alex Ferguson, how he dominated for years.
Yep.
There was one manager who ran the football club. It was him, very mm-hmm. clear.
Yep.
Mourinho, when he first came in at Chelsea, he was the man in charge, nobody else.
Yep.
No Abramovich, no direct contact with Abramovich.
He ran the football operation.
Yeah. You look at Arsene Wenger.
Yeah.
No one was speaking to David Dean or Arsene Wenger was in charge. Pep Absolutely Guardiola right. in charge of the
As
football
it should
club.
Be.
Yeah.
As
and
it
now,
be.
This is where I'm saying the shift in it. When he come back, it wasn't Mourinho in charge. That the power wasn't all with him because there was a contact that the players had with ownership, whether that be Mourinho, Roman, or whoever that may be, which diminishes Mourinho as being the man in charge. It goes against it. So he can demand as much as he wants from these players. If he'd have had the full back, you just go round the back. And it didn't work. And that's for me when I'm saying that was his downfall.
What do you think of Mourinho in recent times? What do you think of the legacy that he leaves of his time at Manchester United and his time at Tottenham?
I would look at his time at Man United being a successful one.
Yeah.
Compared to where they've been. And they've been off it. Before he went in.
By the standards of now.
And since then, of course. Right. So when you see the press conferences of him, of one manager's won three and there's the rest of the managers in the Premier League that have only won two and I'm the one that's won three, respect me and all of that. I think he's spot on what he says. Was he harsh on some of the players at Man United at the time? Did they deserve it? They clearly did because he wouldn't say it otherwise. And
you're seeing some of the effects of some of these players like Pogba and the direction of travel they've gone in.
Yeah, but Pogba, it seems like from the outside, a top player and got all the attributes. And you're saying managers have got to change and people have got to change to try and get the best out of the people. So clearly with Pogba, you deal with him a different way.
Yeah.
But that's very hard as well, I think, when you've been so successful down one way to then go in and change off, for just one person. Because if you change for one person, who else are you letting fall into that bracket? If you've got a Hazard in the group, and this is where he was excellent. And talk about man management. So Hazard was probably the worst trainer in the group. Turned up with his laces undone and all of that. But of a weekend, give you 11 out of 10 every week. Could win the game. Mourinho accepted that. Mourinho accepted that he wouldn't run back and help and support the team as much as everyone else. What he made sure that the other 10 of us had to do extra work for him because he was that good.
And he'd win the game for you.
Yeah, he made that very clear to us. He's like, he's better than all of you. He'll win us the game, so you have to help him. It wasn't the other way of going, Edin, you need to track back and defend in your own half, because it would have gone nowhere.
Interesting, because that's a departure from Pep Guardiola, isn't it? Because Pep Guardiola makes players, Jack Grealish has changed as a player, hasn't he? Mm. He makes them accept that there are some of all their parts, and if they don't do things that he wants them to do, they get themselves into a different team in a different way. I want to go on to the chasing of a European dream and the opportunities that Chelsea didn't get initially in the Champions League, and obviously there'll be two that will be very prevalent for you. One is the situation that probably fueled your dislike of Rafa Benitez, which is the Liverpool game, and the other one is the 2008 Champions League final against Manchester United. And I want to delve into the psyche, the strength of character, because this is a dark moment for you. You know, you take a penalty, you slip over when you take it, and the ball goes away and Man United win the European Cup. You've got to come back from that. You've got to have the mentality to overcome that adversity. And I want to understand what that was like for you in the moments, post the moments, and how you got yourself back on points.
Probably the worst moment in my footballing career, for sure. Still not over it today. I don't think I ever will be. And it's interesting because as a player, you have so many highs.
Yeah.
It's the ones you miss out on and go,
stay with you longer.
Yeah, I'll have to reflect and look back on. So obviously that night we lose and go back to the hotel. The manager demands everyone downstairs for a drink. I can't go down and face the lads. I'm in my room upstairs. Eventually I go down and, you know, have a beer with a group and everyone's obviously confronting me, but very difficult. I just remember standing looking over Moscow in my hotel. I was on about the 25th floor, just looking out, just asking why, why then? Why did it start raining? Why did I slip? All of these things that kind of go over. And probably the hardest thing was that 3 days later, after that, we met up with England. We had a friendly at Wembley against USA. And we drew the game 1-1 and ended up scoring a header from outside the box. And that was probably the hardest moment, because if I could swap any goal in my career, it would be that. And I'm going, I scored a header from 18 yards. And after the game, it fucking broke me. I was bad. But at the time, like, people are more open with this stuff now, aren't they? Mm-hmm. I was going through emotions that probably a lot of people speak about today, but you just go, you have to bottle it and you kind of get on with it and you move on. But again, it's something I'll never get over and never forget.
You get an opportunity in 2012 with Di Matteo to win the Champions League. Did you get injured in the semi-final?
Suspended
in the semi-final. I've got to ask you, I'm not going to read what the producers put here, right? But I'm going to paraphrase it.
What was he thinking?
Right. Yeah, what are you thinking? Full kit, something or another, he said. What are you doing photobombing in a full kit?
Why not?
Because you're not in a team. What are you doing?
Why was I not in a team? I scored the goal in the quarterfinal to get us through to the semis.
Turning up in a full kit.
What?
I'm asking you. You know what I'm asking you, because most people have taken the piss out of it.
Well, they have, but also there was about another 7 or 8 players doing the same thing. But again, because it's me, people jump on the bandwagon and of all
who
of
else
that.
Who did it then?
Ivanovic wasn't even in the squad. Sitting on the crossbar.
Right.
Paulo Ferreira. In his kit, yeah. Of course he was in his kit.
Right.
There was 3 or 4 of us, but again, because it's me, it's blown and it's JT. Listen, I'm proud of what I've done, by the way. I'm not sitting here going, I wish I didn't sit in my full kit. And by the way, I had shin pads, I had the lot on. I probably went for it. It was like...
Was it difficult for you, though, in all seriousness, to not be part of the side that actually won on the night?
Yeah, very difficult, of course. But at the same time, for me, and I say this and I 100% mean this, I'm proper Chelsea. Like, Chelsea's everything to me. So for me, if I would have finished my career and not had the success we had in the Champions League and won it, I'm not sure how I'd be, because I would feel the pressure of all of that and feel the responsibility of that. The fact that we'd done it as a group, with me, without me, honestly, I couldn't care less. I genuinely couldn't care less. If you asked me, would I rather have played? Of course I would have. Yeah. So I don't mean that, you know, blasé, but at the same time, I'd seen Frank, Didier, Ash, Ryan that had been there for many years, Peter Cech, go through so many emotions of us... Probably should have won the Champions League previously on 2 or 3 occasions before, Moscow being one of them, 2009-10 against Barcelona. It just wasn't to be, and I think it's the hardest trophy to win. So I sit here today very proud that I'm part of a group. Yeah, honestly, I do.
Do you consider yourself a European Cup winner? I'm not taking a piss. I'm just asking.
Why wouldn't I?
That's why I'm asking it, right? Because you play in the majority of the games when you get 5
game.
Premier League titles.
Every game.
Right? In terms of the Premier League, when you win the Premier League 5 times, you win the FA Cup 5 times, you win the League Cup 3 times, but you're there in all of those occasions. And in the European Cup or the Champions League, you're not playing in a final. And I'm asking you, because it's your opinion that is more prevalent, it lists you down as a European Cup winner. Do you think you're a European Cup winner or Champions League winner?
Well, of course, but it lists me down as a 5-time FA Cup winner. I didn't play in the 2000 FA Cup, but I was part of the group. I was on the bench for the final. Okay. So I think we've all got a part to play. And again, I think as a football club, the group, the staff, who don't get mentioned on stuff like this and all of that have a big part to play.
Are they
Champions League winners? Yes, they are, because they've got a big part.
Yeah, it wasn't me judging, it was asking.
Yeah.
Because I wondered what you thought of it.
Yeah. What's your thoughts on that? Do you think it's a no?
No, I don't actually. I'm ambivalent about it. I think the team is the sum of all its parts, and the circumstances are that you probably were quite influential in the team getting to the final. And if you hadn't been as influential in the team getting to the final, they wouldn't have had a final to win. And if you're happy with that and you believe that to be the case, I'm not judging it either which way. It's just a question that came into my mind to see if I could get a rise out of you, to be honest. by the way, this Champions League win, how much of it's down to Di Matteo and how much is down to this group of players that are so strong and so good?
You know what? Robbie was brilliant. And I think when he came in, him and Steve Holland, by the way, were absolutely brilliant for the group. Did they try and overmanage us? No. Did they do what they knew the football club needed and warranted at that time? Yes, they did. And they got every ounce out of the players. So you go back to one of your earlier questions of going, was the group too powerful in your years? Well, you just said that 2012 could have been down to the players more than the manager. So actually, there is an importance in that as well.
Yeah, I understand.
But Robbie's team talk night before the game, Champions League final. So normally you sit there, 7:45, dinner's at 8 o'clock, you go in and it's 15, 20 minutes on Bayern Munich. So we're all getting there ready to go of this player, that player, this is how they're going to play, blah, blah, blah. Get in the room and Robbie plays a message. And now it's all the families. So my kids, my wife, Ramirez, his family, his nan and granddad from Brazil. Now everyone's streaming the tears. Everyone's gone. And Robbie.
You lot cry a lot, don't you?
Emotional. Yeah. Robbie, yeah, we do actually, yeah. Robbie put this video together that was really powerful and actually took the pressure off us as a group. I felt that night before going, oh, this has got to be a big meeting. But also taught me something of going, it's not all about the football. Yeah. There's more to this.
Yeah,
and again, because Robbie felt and was Chelsea Football Club, he knew that's what we needed that night. So not to talk about Bayern Munich and how good they were. We knew that.
Yeah.
It was about actually family members that Rami's grandparents that had took him as a young 4 or 5-year-old boy to go and play football over the park and all of that. It was powerful and really emotional to see.
I want to talk to you about England. You know, you guys are, and most of the players, but specifically you, are very successful at club level. But when you get into the national side, the team isn't hitting the heights or winning things. What do you think made England fall short during that period of time?
I've heard a lot of ex-players kind of talk about the rivalry within
the
clubs.
Stuff like that, yeah.
I didn't feel that. I genuinely didn't feel that when I was in there. I think it helped that Man United and Chelsea were dominating at that period of time, and Man United had 5-6 players in the group. Chelsea had 5 or 6 as well in at times. And I felt it was like a good rapport within the group. Did we underachieve? Yeah, of course we did.
But what do you think the reasons were, John? I mean, is it coming up against better opposition? Is it a frailty of English mentality?
I think it's on that top stage of, there was clearly some top managers in the world at the time. Did we have the best managers as England managers? No. Did we have really good managers, really good coaches? Yes, we did.
Right.
But we didn't have the best. But again, listen, we're getting away from that. It's us as players. We were miles off it. I look at 2004, big opportunity for us to do it, and Greece went on to win it.
Yeah.
2006, we fell short again. Obviously, Wayne gets sent off. I do look at the sides around us that they were very, very good sides, I thought.
But look at the players we had, though.
They just seem more together in the group. And I don't know why. It's a question I get asked an awful lot. I generally can't answer it because I don't know.
What about this tactical argument about Gerrard and Lampard being able to play in the same midfield? What was your view on that? Because there's always been this debate about whether they could play in the same team. And when they did, it wasn't as effective as it could be.
Well, again, I think we was putting kind of everyone in the team or the best players in the team and just kind of getting on with it, basically, and finding out a way to win the game. Which, again, you go back to a Mourinho, and I always go back to him because, for me, he's the best.
Yeah.
And I look at him and go, he would have had the balls to drop one of them if he didn't feel the formation was working for the team. Whichever one that was, he would have gone a 2 in midfield with a pivot or whatever that may be, or a number 10 and 2 behind, 2 8s. He would have had the balls to go and do it. I'm not sure anyone else did. Because clearly it wasn't working. There was a couple of games you playing and we were getting overrun in midfield and needed to change things, but wasn't recognised. But you felt it as a player, you felt it on the pitch.
You mentioned a moment ago about maybe not having the best in class of managers. And I would probably concur with you. I don't think Steve McLaren was the best in class of manager. I don't know what you I mean, he gave you the captaincy, sense of loyalty to him.
Steve was an unbelievable coach, a really good coach. As a manager, was Steve a manager? I'm not sure at that level. I'm not sure.
But Capello was there, wasn't he?
He was a top manager, but again, you look at Steve of going, fantastic coach, understood the players probably better than anyone I'd been around, along with Sven. But Capello was a top coach, had the ideas and everything. Yeah.
But you had the players. So yeah. Again, it goes to the point I'm making about why didn't this generation
But then play? Found a way to make it the worst 10 days of your life when you go away of England.
Okay.
And you speak to our generation of players, that's how they felt going away for these camps. Going away with England should be the best time of your career, should be the best moments. It was difficult for the players. We wasn't allowed to do anything and all of that. So you look at the first game we went to, we played, won the quarter final against Germany. We was travelling in suits, so we had an hour and 20 minutes on the bus. And all the players are asking, Stevie, speak to the gaffer about suits. We don't want to wear suits. It's hot, it's horrible. We had a deal with Marks and Spencers. The FA say you have to do it because they've been paid by Marks and Spencers. So again, going, would a Mourinho allow this to happen because they've got to deal with Marks and Spencers? I know the answer to it. No chance. He wants the players comfortable and you go how you're comfortable to the game. We get off the team bus. Everyone's sweating. Aircon's not working. We get off. There's Ozil, Closer. They're in shorts, flip-flops, looking $1 million. Our lads are like dripping of sweat. There's been hardly any water on the bus. Hour and 20 minutes to the stadium, loads of traffic. And you're going, someone's responsible for that.
Mm.
Whether that's the FA, whether that's Capello, whether that's... So us as a group of players, we're trying to address that before, but we can't. So again, going, if things need to be sorted, i.e. the bus or the travel, the attire that we travel in, it should have been sorted way before that quarterfinal. It shouldn't be the day of the quarterfinal. People should be paid to do those and make those big decisions at the right time. And again, you have those discussions like on the plane with AVB, you're not happy, you address it, the situation at that current time.
What's your biggest honour, captaining Chelsea or captaining your country?
As a kid, I would have said England. Now, Chelsea, 100%.
Why?
Just because the fallout of me retiring early. Mm. I've not got many regrets in football, if any. And retiring early from England is the main one for me. Like not reaching 100 caps. I was on the same caps as Wazza when I retired. I was actually on one more. And that still hurts, that special moment to walk out of my kids. I would have got there.
But that was your choice though, wasn't it?
It was my choice, yeah. But there's reasons behind that I can't go into.
No, I won't dig into it too deep then. But when you look at the situation that you get stripped of the captaincy twice, right? You get reinstated. And then you have the situation with Anton Ferdinand, right? Which is well documented. Do you look at the way it was handled and think, because you were acquitted by the CPS, right?
Yeah.
Did you think it was necessary for the FA to then pick up the cudgel and charge you?
No, they didn't need to do that. And also I had discussions with the FA around this. I had an agreement with the FA that acquitted in the court of law.
It should be the highest standard.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And everyone else would follow suit. And that was the agreement going into the Euros in Ukraine. So basically to get me to play, that's what we agreed. Right. That was my deal with the FA. Signing anything, they refused to sign anything, but there was board members that backed me and would follow suit of the court of law. And once I was found not guilty, the FA decided to charge me and took me on a 4-day court hearing at Wembley.
Why do you think that was?
I'm not sure. I'm really not sure.
Not sure, I just don't want to talk about it.
I'm not sure. I don't know why they opted to go down that route, because I played in the Euros for England. Gave everything, had a good tournament myself. I don't know whether it was the power that, or the pressure they was under, I don't know.
Capello supported you through that period, didn't he? Mm. Because he reinstated captaincies over different issues.
And he was privy to those conversations.
And he was privy to those conversations. Why did you retire from international football on the eve of the verdict being handed down? Given your personality, given your ability to overcome most things in life, and whatever challenges they've been, from controversies to not choosing Man United to whatever else you've come up against, you've come out on top, right? For overcoming missing a penalty in the Champions League final. And given what you've just told me about the pride that you would have had for yourself and others around you getting 100 caps, why couldn't you have overcome that and gone, I'm going to overcome this because there's something more meaningful for me here than just my initial reaction to a set of circumstances?
I could have overcome it, given a fair trial again, and given the evidence that we had in the court of law, which was refused by the FA. So day one, we go
into... So you don't think you had a fair hearing in the FA?
No, I go into Wembley on the first day, and my lawyers and myself demand evidence to be in that was in the court of law, and it gets refused literally blatantly. So we then have an hour's meeting outside of that. Board members are refused entry to come and give evidence, backing me and telling their side of the story, et cetera, all of that. So right from the outset, it wasn't going to be a fair trial, clearly. That they'd made up their mind, Simon, right from the outset,
right.
In my mind.
Okay.
How many cases? 1,000?
Mm-hmm.
How many have they ever lost? One.
Mm-hmm.
Is it even one? I'm not even sure. I think it might be one. So did I feel like it was fair going into it? Did I want to put myself through 4 days of absolute hell again? No, I didn't. Would I have done if it was fair? Of course I would have done.
Yeah.
I stood there on day one ready to face it all again and, like you say, come out the other side of it. But it wasn't fair from the outset. So why am I going to put myself through it? I had a conversation with Chelsea. This is going to be my decision. They backed me and I took the ban that come my way.
Do you look back on it now with the regret that you didn't come back and say, right, well, that's not going to beat me?
It was a time that was... clearly very difficult for Anton and his family.
Yeah.
Clearly very difficult for myself as well. For me, it was the court of law is the final say. There's no bigger in the UK, so...
But when you reflect back on the situation with Anton Ferdinand, and only two people know what really went on, right, you and him. When you reflect back on it, what's your thoughts? Is it regret? Is it recrimination? Is it a sense of unfairness? What's your overriding thought?
Well, I think it's a few things, and I've never really gone into detail about this, but I tried to make contact with Anton that evening after the game. I tried to make contact with Rio and their agent after the game, and I basically got shut down instantly. I knew Anton. We were mates, and, you know, I wasn't socially, but we knew each other. We always got on well, obviously got on well with Rio. We could have done something that was probably more powerful than what came about in the end, and that's probably my disappointment, because it's in the game, clearly in the stadiums and all of that now, that we need to get out for sure. We could have done something very powerful as a group of players, not only us but everybody else, I think, at the time. And since then I've tried to speak to Rio, who doesn't want to talk to me at all. I've seen him on the beach in Dubai and refused to speak to me, and there's not much more I can do. I think it could have been addressed and could have been dealt with a lot better, if I'm honest. But he went through a very difficult time, like I did. And the outcome was the outcome, and the court of law. And the other one I don't really pay much to attention about, to be honest, the FA one.
But you would refute any observation that you were racist, wouldn't you?
Simon, 100%. Yeah. I can't believe you even asked the question, to be honest.
No, because if I didn't ask the question, someone would say, why didn't you ask that question? I'm not suggesting that I have a view on it either which way, because I wasn't there. Only people that know what was in that conversation. I've heard versions of
it. Yeah, but you know, you've been in football a long time. Yeah. You know me. You've spoken to people for sure.
Absolutely.
Before this.
Yeah, I have my views on it, but my views are not as important as yours. So it's not a judgment on my part. None of this conversation is a judgment. Mm. It's a conversation between you and I, because I think it's interesting because of the position that you occupy.
Mm.
Going on to your aspirations and your journey post your career, Stevie Bruce says you were useless in the fucking playoff final, by the way.
No, I was actually.
thought I'd drop that as a little boost for your ego.
Just to bring me back down.
But notwithstanding that, I think a few people said to Bruce he was useless at his time as Aston Villa. So there we are. Look, you've gone into coaching and into assistant manager's role, but how serious were you when you went into coaching? That, because you seem to be moving around. I get different messages about what you're doing and what you might want to do and where you think you are. But how serious was your initial perception of wanting to go into coaching?
Well, very serious, because I spent 3 years doing my coaching badges.
Yeah.
So going through all the process of pro license, all of that, which is a long... a long time, actually, when you go through it. A lot of kind of travelling up to St George's Park and all of that. And I spent 4 years at Villa, one as playing, three as managing.
Yeah.
I effectively lived in the Belfry for 4 or 5 days a week to be at Aston Villa. Did I need to have done that? No, I didn't. I was quite happy after retirement to go up. I'm done. But I was so driven. I, I see myself as a manager. Could I go in straight away?
You see yourself now as a manager?
Yeah, 100%. Right, yeah, okay. 100%. And I think a lot of people see themselves as coaches or they'll be good coaches. I'm not sitting here saying I'm the best coach. As a manager, I feel that's what I've done for the last 22 years is manage people, yeah. manage the dressing room. And I think if ever, more than today, it's about managing people. And that's what I've done. And that's what I feel I was best at in my career. So I find that hard, actually, that people are even having that thought of going, I lived away from London for 4 years, effectively.
Well, is this the conflicting quotes from you? Mm. When you talk about, you obviously were Dean for 3 years, and you talk about the tremendous honour and the privilege of being at Aston Villa and the coaching opportunities there. You talk about the reasons why you left Villa because it was personal circumstances. Then you talk about having left Villa, applying for 2 or 3 jobs, interviewed at Newcastle, interviewed at other clubs, League One club telling you they want to play like Man City, and that sort of stuff. But then this final quote that I don't know if it's chronologically reflective, but I'll throw it at you because it seems to be almost the defining statement which contradicts what you've just said. So I've always seen myself as a coach in the long term. I enjoyed the coaching side of it, but I have to say there were better coaches than me. I always saw myself as a manager, but I went for a couple of jobs and I left Villa, didn't get those jobs, got deflated with it. So I've just decided against it. That's you. So that reads to me like, fuck it, I'm not that motivated to be a manager. So it's a question. In terms of what is the message?
So let's just go back on that. So when I left Villa, obviously it says for family, I had to leave for probably the most difficult time in my career that I'll never speak about and will never need to go into. But at the time, we had to say that I left Villa for those reasons. Yeah. Dean and Kristin Perslow, the only two people that know, my wife and my two kids, that's it.
And that's private and your business, right?
So come away from that, having been away for 4 years in a hotel, then come back and an opportunity falls on my lap that Newcastle want to meet me. I'm way out of my depth, by the way, way out of my depth. This was all new to me. So coaching, all of that, I was very comfortable.
Yeah.
Like I said, I'm not the best coach and I'm not claiming to be the best coach.
Paul said the same thing when he went for the Blackburn Rovers job. He said, I was way out of my depth. I couldn't, didn't really even want it. Went there, did what I thought was a piss poor presentation. Couldn't believe I got a phone call. Yeah. So you won't be the first to have said
this. But this was my first real presentation. When I got the Villa job, I sat with Dean and we discussed football and, my brother used to play for him and all of that. So we knew each other anyway. I had the owners of Newcastle in my house that flew down in a helicopter and we spoke that they was actually meeting myself and Arteta and ended up going with Brucey.
Yeah.
And I look back now, geez, at some of the questions, some of the answers, I was miles off it. Didn't really think about it, but it was such a good learning curve for me.
About what? Give us a question.
Just about certain players of what you do with this player who's been on the fringe, how you're going to get him back in and all of this. And it was like, well, I'll give everyone a chance. And the cliches. And it was like, well, no, we don't want him. We want him out. Yeah. And I'm like, for me,
then I'll do this then.
Well, as a manager, I'm going, but I want every player possible. Yeah. And it was just a really good learning curve. It was, I'm glad I didn't get it because I was miles out of my depth. But that kind of poked the bear a little bit for the next couple. So after that, I had a really, really good interview with Sunderland. So they'd just sacked Lee Johnson. They were sitting third in the table, I think.
In League One.
In League One, I'd spent probably 2 weeks looking at games, looking at the team, the players, knew everyone. Had a really good meeting, come away thinking, oh my God, that's mine.
Nailed it.
Mine there. Got on really well with the sporting directors and all of that. Got the message, went really well, just a little bit inexperienced. Mm-hmm. Same with another one, just no experience. So I'm sitting there going, how do I then get this experience? Like, to be honest, I didn't really want to go as low as League One, but I promise you, Sunderland was such a good...
It's a big club.
Sunderland was getting up that year.
It's a big club, yeah.
That's the one I feel that kind of got away that would have given me a promotion straight away and I'm on my way after that. So now I'm kind of not even getting phone calls within that to go and interview with teams, with owners, with all of that. Am I looking a little bit? I'm not throwing myself out there. And again, this is where a little bit of me as a character, should I be going, I want this job, I'm throwing my hat in. I'm a little bit like, if someone wants me, I think they should come to me a little bit.
Yeah.
Now, you've probably got a different view on that.
But
I just think where I've been and the career I've had, I'm not saying I want to manage Chelsea player, Football Club. Yeah, no, as a player. But also that still carries a little bit of weight.
Of course it does. It gets you in the door.
Absolutely.
It don't get you a job.
No, it doesn't. But then it's down to me then.
Right.
But after that meeting, it's down to me. It's on me. But the managers I've worked with and played under, I've learned so much and I'm...
You've got that wisdom to impart.
Yeah.
Right? Doesn't make you a manager though, because
other people's
intellectual capital doesn't mean that you've got the ability to deliver it.
Listen, it's a real difficult one for me because I'm back home. I'm back in Surrey now. I'm in the academy at Chelsea working with the kids. I absolutely love it. I love being around these kids because any question they've got or any bit of, I've been there,
you've
I've seen it,
it
I've done it.
Yeah.
It's on my doorstep. I love the football club. The most important thing, I love helping these kids that are hopefully going to come through into our first team. Is it a great financial? No, it's not. Of course it's not.
No, but you don't need the money.
No, I know. But that's what I'm saying. For me to be able to sit there and choose of go, I do that 3-4 days a week. I play a little bit of golf. I take my kids out for dinner after school.
Yeah, but these aren't the things that made John Terry.
No.
The very characteristics that propelled you to the top of your profession. Yeah.
But Simon, if you were to see me, when I was at Villa, I'd done my badges. I was there coaching at Villa. So Dean used to get us in at 6:30 in the morning, be there at 6:30, finish the day's work, 6-7 o'clock, do my coaching badges from 8 till 10, sleep at the training ground in the manager's office
you're fully
sometimes.
Committed.
You're in fully committed. So giving everything and waiting for these opportunities when I'm in it. So I've got an opportunity to leave Villa whilst I was there to go and manage. I opted against it. I'm not going to say where, but it was a Championship club, lower down the leagues. It's maybe one I should have jumped, but right. I was loving my experience. I didn't feel like I was ready. I look at the managers of my generation. I look at Lamps. So I know Lamps inside out. Yeah. Lamps articulate, very intelligent, unbelievable player, got a great football brain. Could I have gone in at Derby and done what Frank done? No. That's why I needed to go in with a Dean Smith at Aston Villa and learn my trade.
Yeah, which is
because
fair
I needed I needed to be educated from that side of it. And I'm so glad I did because I learned so much in that time. Accumulate that with me, John Terry, the player, the managers I've played under, that turns into something I think pretty special.
What do you think of what, three of your contemporaries, Lampard, Gerrard and Rooney have done?
Well, it's probably not gone as well as they would have liked for sure.
Evidently. Yeah. not talking cliches.
Just trying to avoid the question.
Yeah, I know you are.
I think they'd be disappointed because I look at that generation, I think Lamps and Stevie were probably the two standout when you're playing of going, yeah, they'll be very good.
Right.
They'll be very good. Have they been? I think Frank's done okay, me.
Do you?
Yeah, I think Frank's done okay. I really do. I think his first spell at Chelsea, I think gets very quickly forgotten what he'd done with that group. No spending.
Right.
A group of very young, you look at the Chelsea squad at the minute, a group of very, very young players. Lamps had Mason Mount, Olerena, Ruben Loftus-Cheek, all of that. And got him into Champions League football. And the year after, Chelsea go and win the Champions League because of that. I think that gets forgotten very quickly. It's very difficult to do at a top, top football club.
Can I ask you a question, a loaded question about you and management? Do you think, with reflection, that these have shaped an opinion of you in people's minds that might be prejudicial to wanting to engage with John Terry on a senior management level? Do you think that or do you not?
Yeah, I do actually. I probably agree with you on that. And even in one of my interviews, kind of afterwards, we're sitting there talking after the Zoom meeting's gone on, and it was. I thought you'd be very much more confrontational. I thought it was a really strange thing to say.
Right, because they've got a judgment of you.
Yeah, but also they've got a judgment of me as John Terry the footballer.
Yeah.
John Terry the footballer turned up every single day and gave absolutely everything. Would kick my nan if I had to win a tackle. That kind of mentality. And now I'm sitting there going, I need the help of my CEO, my sporting director. Guys, I need you all. For us to build something at this football club, we all need to be on the same page. It's not like I'm in charge, an old school mentality. I don't think that's the way that works for me. Certainly, I've seen that and felt that, and that's how I've been as a captain. I've identified in people, and I think that's the biggest thing, whether that's football, whether that's the world of investment or whatever that may be.
Yeah.
If you invest in people, you get so much back.
Very true. Very true. And that's probably why you know, doing a bit more medium, John, might create a different perception of you. And I mean, scarcity is great. It's great having you here today. And I'm delighted to have you here. But I think that the perception of you might change the more you put yourself out and about. What do you make of Chelsea now? I mean, here's where you can be totally cliched and duck every single question probably. Right? But what do you make of this period of time at Chelsea?
I think everyone's got to be really patient on this. And I say that because I'm around it. I'm not part of the first team. I'm in the academy.
No.
Occasionally our boys go over and you get to see some of these boys. There's some quality players in that dressing room, but they're babies. Honestly, okay. They're babies. They're kids. And they just need a little bit of time. You can see the performance the other night. Like, where does that come from against Everton?
Everton were dreadful.
Yeah, they were. But still, you still have to deliver that as well. You've got one of the youngest players.
He's a player called Palmer, by the way, isn't he?
Incredible player. Yeah. But one of the youngest players in the group showing big personality.
Yeah.
Is that because he's been at Man City and he's played under a top manager and he's showing that personality of what it takes?
You were 21. Get captaincy.
Very true. But we've got some good players in the group. Is there going to be change in the summer? Yeah, there's going to be an evolution of players, and players are going to come and go in the next couple of windows for sure. In my opinion, we need a bit of experience in there. So we've got Thiago on the verge of leaving the football club. Thiago has been unbelievable. And I'm looking at Levi Colwell, so a very defensive kind of vision on this. I think he's going to be a very, very good player. Alongside Thiago Silva for another year makes him an even better player.
Right.
So you need players like
need
this.
The balance.
Yeah. It's not all about, I think the mindset's been, let's get young players in because the wages are low and it brings the wage budget down.
Comparatively low.
Yeah. You see what that does to performances. It gets very much like that, like we're seeing. And I think if that's the mindset of the ownership, then we've got to roll and ride with that. Yeah. Is that what Chelsea fans are used to? Will they accept it? Of course they won't. No. You've seen the turbulence there. Mm. You've heard it as well. They're not happy, but I think there's bits in there that I'm quite pleased with as well, and players that I'm actually happy that are at our football club.
You're kicking the television screen the other day when they're grabbing that penalty and having a fight over it. What would you have done?
I thought Connor dealt with it. It's very difficult for me.
I thought Cole dealt with it. I thought Connor dealt with it.
He'd give him a couple of shoves away. Yeah. It was always difficult for me. I was always furthest back, so it took me a lot. I was never the quickest as well, so it took me a long time to get there. So it was always that we had one. Didier and Frank last game of the season against Wigan, and Didier wanted to take it. He was going for the top goal scorer in the Premier League. Lamps took it. Them two had murders at half time, and it got sorted by half time. Didier scored in the second half anyway and won the top goal scorer. But it happens on the pitch. My issue is that if it's 0-0 against Man City in the semi final, who wants to take it?
Yeah.
Cole will.
Yeah, absolutely. Think Conor Gallagher's a good captain?
I like Conor.
Yeah,
I know him as a young kid, and seeing him now, if I'm a Chelsea fan, I look at that and go, if there's one player I want to represent and wear the armband, it's him for me.
You do?
Yeah. 100,
you do?
Yeah, 100%.
Because I made a sweeping statement the other day from what my opinion is worth. I looked at Chelsea and go, has it reached a point where you've got captains in the past like John Terry that have taken them to levels, and now you've got captains like Conor Gallagher? But that might be just me being mean-spirited. Yeah. You like him.
I think that's harsh. I think he's a very good player. I think like all of them, are they Didier Drogba? Are they Frank Lampard? Are they Hazard? No, not at the minute they're not, but they're still young and they're still nurturing. If I'm a fan at the minute and I'm watching this group of players, I want to play, and I was this player who gives absolutely everything. And I think Conor does that, and he's got the quality as well, but he's the one driving and pushing this team to the level in a different way that probably I would have as captain. I was a little bit more vocal and showed my actions as well. So there's different ways to lead for sure. But I think Connor's doing it away as a supporter.
And he's growing into it as well.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And also coming to me for advice. He wants to know, he wants to develop.
Oh, that's the bit you
and
like,
he, and
is
he
it?
Wants, yeah, I do yeah. like it, oh, yeah. yeah.
What are you hoping for England?
I think we'll win the Euros this year. Yeah. I think we'll do it. You're not too hopeful?
I don't know. I'm a believer of the players. Mm. I think we've got enough talent to murder the opposition. I have reservations about the manager. But you think that we'll...
I think what goes in their favour hugely is the opposition. I don't think the opposition countries are as good as they used to be.
I agree. Who's the midfield three?
So I would go Rice, Bellingham. Palmer's got to have a look in there somewhere. He's got to be involved in some capacity, I think. He's been that good.
Mm.
Whether that's a Foden in there. Yeah. And I mean, we've got so many options, aren't we, going forward?
He's some player, Bellingham, though, isn't he? And
incredible.
Some kid, though. I mean, I watched his interview the other day. The way he handles himself.
Yeah. Incredible young man, isn't he? Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. Just reminds me of Zidane as well, the way he carries himself. And
well, he's wearing the same shirt, isn't he?
Yeah.
John, really enjoyed the interview.
Simon, thank you.
Thanks
mate.
For being so upfront,
cheers.
Mate.
Thank well you.
Cheers.
Ciao.
Up Front with me, Simon Jordan, is brought to you by William Hill. Future episodes can be found on YouTube, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. 18+, please gamble responsibly.